Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me again this week is Brad Park. Hello, Brad.
Morning. Hello.
How are you doing today?
Great. Great. Day's just starting, so full thing in front of me, but doing very well. Thanks.
Awesome. So, Brad, you were on the show a couple months ago, but could you go ahead and introduce yourself again and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I don't necessarily remember what I said last time. It'd be easy just to rehash it. But I'm Brad. I'm on the East Coast of the United States. Was selected for one of the USAWC teams this year. Should have been occurring. Play consistently with the Mayo Offers put together by Danny McGeehan. I know another guest host of the show prior. I've been playing War Machine for, I think, 9-ish years. And during that time played pretty much exclusively Crix, and I think the reason I'm back on is because I said almost exclusively for those 9 years.
Yeah, so we have a Discord channel for the Patreon backers of the podcast, and I will occasionally ask for suggestions on who people want to hear from for a faction. And so I asked who I should send up the bat signal for minions, and we had some people recommend you, and so that's how we got where we are.
Yeah, so back in December, so only about, well, it's already almost end of June, so close to 7 months ago now, is
so
when
give
I
or
kinda,
take a decade ago.
Yeah, since. Right, yeah, an entire eternity, but yeah, I picked up minions back in December, just looking to kind of try something different. It was a local in my area had minions forever and gave me the offer to borrow them. And I was doing it just as a, you know, I was expecting to do it for like a weekend or two, playing it at a couple steamrollers and then saying, all right, that was fun, tossing it back to them. And then I fell into the trap of really enjoying it. So I've been playing minions back when you could play over the table since December. And then when things changed due to, and I would kind of switch between minions and Crix up until about March, when at least for us here in the Northeast, we're put into like lockdown and quarantine or like the stay-at-home orders. And then from there, I switched heavily and played a lot on Vassal and now on Wartable. And in the first month or so, I'd kind of switch back and forth between Crix and minions. But for the past few months, it's been just kind of solely minions.
Okay, so again, the format of the show, we'll be having a conversation for around 45, 50 minutes, and we'll do that in the main episode. We'll be available to everyone for free, and then we'll have the same length of episode as a bonus episode available for people who are supporting us on Patreon. So, to start off, we have a bunch of questions from people who are supporting us on Patreon. So, question is from Tokunator. He's a new backer on Patreon, so thank you for supporting the podcast. He says, Helga on Wills, what would you play with her?
I think a lot of my lists across minions have a lot of the same core elements. That's just kind of what I think is natural from Warlord for Food, but I have a Helga 2 list that I really liked and played a good bit. I'll run over the key pieces of it very quickly. It's Helga 2. It's got two Roadhogs and a Warhog. And then there's also a Meyer running a Wrassler for all your Warbeasts in the list. And then Solos, it has two Void Archons, two Dunion Archons, Scythe Wastelander, Bone Shrine, and then it has two units of Pharaoh Valkyries. And that's actually the full 75. So what I like about that list is for any one of the three war beasts that you're running on Helga, whether it's through upkeep and use of feet, or if you're just recasting both spells, any one of your war beasts can be mat 11, rat 6, which is pretty astounding for a faction that's a little notorious for having mat 6 war beasts. I should say any non-Rassler war beast can have that. And then between Rage, Dark Shroud in the list, you can also kind of swing a 5-point damage swing as well beyond just like the Warhog's dial. What's also pretty great for this list is the Roadhogs to try and like, get engagement for you to begin starting off the fight. You can go forward and spray, and you have the ability to boost on multiple models. You can go a little aggressive with Fury, because after they're done taking their range attacks, they can then repo back three. And you have the Junior Archons on the list who can then Shepherd's Call and start clearing off some Fury. And you can really start forcing that positioning as well, using that trick, but also then dropping clouds in front of them with Meyer. And even if Meyer drops down to zero Fury because he puts out four clouds, I'm sorry, four clouds, he puts out two clouds for four Fury, you have a good bit of safety in this list because you have the six Feral Valkyries for Shield Guard, you have the Wastelanders an additional Shield Guard, pseudo Shield Guard, and then even if things should get through to him, unless it's like a Trick Shot or an E-Leap, you have two Dunion Archons. So Meyer can be really difficult to dig out when he's standing behind your army and has all those extra defenses. And then the last kind of, I think, cute bit in the list that Helga, too, is doing that other Warlocks aren't is when she puts out Concealment around her. That affects, of course, the Wastelander. So shooting into Helga is really difficult because Wastelander will be there for one of the shots at effective defense 19 unless you can ignore Concealment. Also makes some of your already kind of okay defensive stats, like a defense of a Warhog or a Roadhog at 12, go to a 14 against shooting where that... There you'll have a much more higher likelihood of shots missing with that plus two there. I really like Helga too. I think Refuge the Feat was something that I undervalued somehow. Refuge was always a tremendous spell, but when you get to apply it to your entire army for a round, it's pretty remarkable the ability for you to go in, remove one or two key P elements or just really pressure spot on the table and then come back 7 inches for Roadhogs because they get to use their dial for that move. 9 inches for Helga. Void Archons are completely impossible to pin down that turn because they get to charge out. They can port somewhere if they should want to, and then after all of that, then take a refuge move of 6 inches. So that, I mean, they can clear the entire table during the course of the turn. I really like Helga too. I also appreciate casters that in that mid to late game can go in and start getting in like solid work themselves, and her going to Mat 11, Powell 18 and 15 is pretty remarkable.
So I likely should have asked this question to start sure. with.
Sorry.
But, so although some of it was based on some of the things you said, so it'll be fine. You said that there in general there's kind of a core that you kind of work with will work for food, and then obviously whatever caster you play, that's going to change up how the list plays quite a bit. There's a lot of people who, I'm assuming, listeners of this show, who at this point, they've never had a chance to play against Helga 2 yet. They don't know a ton about her. Because basically she released right in the heart of this pandemic. Can you give maybe a quick rundown of her or what she would bring to a list that's unique about her or how her list tends to typically play?
Yeah, so just about how yourself. Yeah, absolutely. So kind of the biggest things are, or the biggest thing, of course, is Wild Ride. It's a lot of rules that give your Warbeast, Cavalry, Pathfinder, and Repo 3. The most impactful of those, or the two most impactful are probably Pathfinder and Repo 3. Cavalry does come up where you get boosted charge attack rolls. Impact attacks, I found, is something that comes up not that frequently, but is great to have. But Cavalry and Pathfinder are huge. So with pretty rare exception, the Warbeasts and minions don't have Pathfinder. So you have to have other ways to get it to them, whether it's a Witch Doc Croc for Ghostly or Jaga just putting out Ghostwalk. So just giving it to your entire battle group is pretty tremendous. The Repo 3 is also... very nice. I've ran another iteration of the list that had Gunboars in it, so the ability for either Roadhogs or Gunboars to go forward and shoot and then back out of threat ranges gives a minions list the ability to kind of reach out and grab things that make it so your opponent can't just kind of wait for you to want to commit into them. Even though you're running a fairly melee-centered list, because you're able to take off the front few guys in each infantry unit or put in a couple columns worth of damage into a Warjack, if they sit back and wait forever, and there's scenario parity, there's the chance they're going to be losing too much that when the fight actually starts, they're going to be too far behind. So that's pretty gigantic. In terms of what she's doing on a turn-by-turn basis, she's going to put out Battle Host and upkeep it for pretty much the entire game. I've had some late games where she might have lost all of her Warbeasts where you drop it, but that's pretty much the only time, because then you get actual zero benefit out of it. But Battle Host is up the entire game. Rapport is up through the course of the game, because with Rapport and Engine, you get to an effective mat 11 on a Warbeast, which is astounding. And that's, I think, kind of the key parts of her kit. And then Engine. So those three spells. She also has Battering Ram. Even though you can push things 3 inches away, and in theory clear scenario elements with it, I find myself not really ever casting Battering Ram unless I'm just looking for a PAL 12. The secondary effect is, nothing there. And Primed can come up in some pretty interesting spots in the late game where maybe you've lost a Warbeast or two, or you're under like a control caster's feet, so you need to start getting work in from the Feral Valkyries, or I've never put it on a Dunar Archon, but I guess you could, or like a Void Archon. So Primed on any one of those just turns them up to 11, but I think especially the Feral Valkyries, with it making it +2 to attack and damage rolls for melee. Assuming you have Gang, each Feral Valkyrie turns into a mat 10 charging PAL 14, and has a secondary mat 10 PAL 16 for the point-blank shot. That turn you commit them, they're probably going to die, because they go down in armor, and when they die, they explode and also pretty much kill each other. So you have to make sure you're getting work in from them. But on any given turn, what you're looking to do is use Helga and her Warbeast to go in, kill a model or two. They don't have to be anything flashy, even if you're just picking up one or two infantry models, and then with feet coming back to full distance, or using the lightning strike animus and doing the same thing, and you're really playing a hit and run style game, combined with clouds. There's some shooting, there's disposable models that make it hard to shoot into it. The list plays a solid game all the way through the early and mid parts of the game, because every model on the list, for the most part, gets to do work. Dunar Archons look on their card like very much just support pieces, but in a mid game where you get a charging mat 7 PAL 14, because something died near them and they got angry, Dunar Archons consistently for me have to get into melee, as opposed to just kind of standing in the back. And I think that's a key component of the list as well, is making sure that through the course of the game all your models get to do work in. That's what makes Helga 2 different, because I think that was also part of it. I think, the big thing is Pathfinder, the ability for your army to reposition entirely, and then the insane mat swing that Engine and Rapport give.
All right, so the next question from Torkenter, he asks, is Maelok Meat Mountain with 15 Gatormen still a competitive list?
Yeah, so I think so. I have a local in my area that runs that list, and Maelok War for Food is interesting, and it's good, right? Like, the models in the list, really, no matter how you want to build his list, are more dynamic, and it's pretty obvious. The Gators are not like a depth of rules on them; they're a depth of boxes and armor. The really kind of cute list where you like take double primals and double voids and like all this stuff with a list of rules in the back of their card make them more susceptible, I think, to control casters and range lists that can pick out individual elements on the way in. And I Maelok makes that harder, of course, but it's still possible. Whereas you flip that, and the second thing with that list is it's really relying on primals and mortality to be its mat fixer, because it doesn't have a wealth of attacks. It needs to make sure that the attacks it has, get their hits in. Whereas I think the posse build, in a game where really both sides of the table are turning into much more elite low model count lists, what the posse do is they bring you pretty much the complete opposite of that. So if your opponent only has 10 kind of really solid attacks each turn, each attack isn't going to one round a posse member. And then you can really start taking table space, because the posse then supported still by Warbeasts in that list. There's still usually Primal Archons in the Blind Water list, because there's pretty much no reason not to take them. So you still have kind of those souls in the list that Will Work for Food has as well. But you trade out like a lot of utility just for bulk, which I think you could make an argument that in a vacuum isn't as great, but when you're having the meta considered in mind as well, look at that little podcast plug. But when you have the meta in mind as well, it can be a choice that's worth considering. I think you look at a lot of Flames lists, like Flames in the Darkness, and the infantry are, I think, tailor-made for Posse to fight against. With the additional fact that when Posse go undead because of Death Pact, you now no longer have Legion of Lost Souls recurring. Like, there's never Legion of Lost Souls recurring in that list. So effectively, if your Maelok Blindwater list can kill Morrow Archons, which between Primal Archons and Wrasslers and Swamp Horrors, you're certainly able to do. Assuming you can do that, I think the Blindwater list is well positioned to fight against most Flames lists.
I mean, certainly that seems like something that should be of pretty good value in the meta. I am a little bit surprised that it seems like at its core, that list tends to be something where you're trying to take advantage of stats or trying to have kind of the brute force of your math overwhelm your opponent. And mm-hmm. one of the things that's, I guess, surprises me maybe a little bit with your answer is that in general, it seems to be like as lists get older and models get older, the less well they're able to perform when the main thrust of the list is kind of a, you know, my numbers are going to overwhelm your numbers as the models end up aging out or the new shiny hotness of the Legion of Lost Souls or whatever ends up being able to overwhelm those numbers. It sounds like in your experience, this one's still been able to hold up fairly well in some of the matchups. Is would that be fair to say?
Yeah, so to expand on, I will say that the Maelok Willark food list is much more dynamic, but Blindwater, specifically with Maelok, I think still pushes armor well enough, and there's a lot of things that prey on living models, which that doesn't exist within Maelok, of course, as well. So that certainly helps between Negation Angels with Paralysis or... again, Legion recurring off of them. So I think both of those position well. But to your, I think, larger point of models aging out, I think that is certainly true, just like as a dynamic for the game. But I think the flip side to that is that even models that were... I don't think Posse were ever at the forefront of the meta, but like models that were like a forefront list for their faction like 2 years ago or so, some of those, of course, right now, if you try and translate them over to today, don't really get to do on the table what they're looking to do. But they were good before because they had synergies that worked well and they had everything that kind of came together for them, which is the definition of synergy. but that doesn't cease, right? So, like, I remember, just to kind of have a quick aside for when I was in, well, I still do play Crix, but when I was playing Crix all of last year or 2 years ago now, I only really started playing Ghost Fleet post nerf. And that's because at the time when they were pre nerf, I didn't really have all the Revenant crew together. But what ended up happening is because they were no longer the powerhouse that was Tenegra 1 Ghost Fleet, the like targeted RFP at the time, excuse me, was not really taken. You didn't have to worry about running into Ghost Fleet when you went to Steamrollers at conventions because it got nerfed and no one was playing it. So for that year, I was playing Terminus Ghost Fleet and continually would keep hitting matchups where there was no RFP and the list was able to really start doing what it really wanted to. I think kind of on a similar level, you could do Maelok Blindwater because lists are not set up to play against 15 to 20 models that your opponent ultimately doesn't care about, right? Those models are there to get working when they can, but to deliver primals, deliver your war beasts, and deliver the couple key souls you might have in your list, like Totem Hunter or whatever else. I think that's a little bit what's different is that getting through the bulk models that while they are chaff, right? Because losing half of them doesn't mean that you can't win that game. You also can't ignore them, right? Like their armor, 18 every turn, 20 in melee, 20 and 22 during feat. with eight boxes and tough. I mean, they can be a bear to chew through, especially when behind them, if you're going into melee to try and kill them, behind them is all of the stuff that will actually do stuff to you in melee. And I think that's it. I don't think that's true with every list where you can look back at the meta's past and start bringing out the old list. But if you can look at an old list and go, you know, this kind of has all the tools I need to play against X matchup that I'm looking at now, there's really no reason you can't play older models if it is serving that end goal for you.
All right. So next question comes from Settlementor. He says, what do you think are the strongest lists for minions right now?
It's likely still Arcadius. I am not a good enough Arcadius player to put the fear of God in people like other Arcadius players can. But Arcadius is still up there. His threat ranges are bananas. Void Archons did nothing but help his game by giving him even more dynamic pieces. So I would say certainly still Arcadius. And then beyond that, I think the answer is a lot harder to come by. And I think that's kind of what you brought up before, where I let you know that a lot of my lists had a similar core to them. They traditionally always have Void Archons. Actually, I shouldn't say traditionally. They always have Void Archons. Some lists have Primal, some don't. But Feral Valkyries are also pretty much a mainstay. Dunian Archons are becoming much more of a mainstay. Their value just keeps going up. So the Warlocks that you can surround that with will make those pieces do different things, which is tremendous. You have to know how to use that in any given matchup. But to like list a definitive off list is, I think, much more difficult. I still really like Helga 1. I think Jaga is tremendous. I'm a fan of Helga 2. I have recently picked up Sturmandrang, who have some interesting control set up to them, along with TK, of course, which is pretty historically the best spell in the game. Beyond that, I also had a short bit with Midas I thought was interesting. I played Rask and Barnabas 2, but that was only over the tail. Actually, I've not done them yet on War Tail or Vassal. You can go a pile of directions. I think most list pairs will start with Arcadius, and if they're not using Arcadius, which is perfectly fine, you don't necessarily need to bring them. I think that list is going to get replaced by Rask. I think generally Arcadius or Rask will be in most like list pairs you'll see on a convention level. On the local level where people are playing what they want, I mean, it's impossible to tell. But as a whole, minions have a pretty wide wealth of options when it comes to casters. So it's hard to pin down, but still a big fan of Arcadius. Helga 1 still great. Helga 2, Jaga, Rask. I mean, it nearly any of them.
All right, so the next question that we have from Settlementor, he says, what are the most difficult opposing lists to tech for in the current tournament meta?
So I assume that's specific to minions.
Yeah, I would assume so.
Yeah. The most difficult to tech for. So I think I'm fairly naive on this topic, where when I'm building list pairs, I'm kind of just building in synergies that I enjoy and then I'm figuring out while I'm playing. So I'm not, well, I am considering the meta, like I have to have things that can play into like Strange Bedfellows or Flames or whatever. The tools are almost kind of in there already. Or at least like the ability to play on the table so you don't get absolutely run over are there on the table already. So a lot of it is just figuring out while playing. I don't really think I'm teching for any particular matchup. I think if I was going to do anything, if I was going to tech for a strong gun line, if I was worried there was like a McKay or a Sloan in my meta, I'm not actually sure. I've never played the matchup. I'm told Rask is not that great because it can just outweigh your feet. So that's not tremendous. I don't think minions has a great answer into really strong gun lines. Feral Valkyries certainly help, and Rask feet can help. But assuming that they have more than one round of shooting, it can get difficult to get through all of it. Especially where if you don't, after that, those two rounds of shooting, kill enough of their ranged elements to not get absolutely blown out. I did actually, speaking of style guns, though, I played against Siege 1 from Daniel Bergstrom, and had lost about a third of my army before Siege 1 feat, just because of the strong range elements in the list. So I was forced into going for an assassination where the dice didn't come up. But I'd say, yeah, Siege 1 Sloan's, McKay, all of those I think are the really hard games. I think what's really good for minions right now is that, for the most part, those gun lines were chased out of the meta by other lists. Whether it was Zol 2 Flames, Strange Bedfellows just having defense 16-ish models that are immune to blast damage across the whole list for shooting. So I think one of the worst things for minions right now is actually being handled for the most part by non-minions lists.
So it feels like some of the driving forces right now in the meta are going to be some lists like Strange Bedfellows or Flames in the Darkness or Infernals.
Mm-hmm.
Has it been your experience that minions doesn't really struggle to play into those lists or those factions?
Strange Bedfellows is a really hard game because they threaten forever, and with paralysis can make it so that diving back in is very difficult. What's nice is their models are very, very flimsy, so if you're able to hit, all the angels will just die there. I do likely need to play in Strange Bedfellows more to be absolutely sure, like to get more assured from it, but play into it a few times, and the tools to play against it are there. Like, it was a playable game both times, albeit difficult. So I didn't have to construct anything crazy to play against it. It was just the kind of standard list I was playing at the time, and you have answers for it there. Flames, in really kind of every like non-Rast, non-Arcadius build, because I don't think I really played those in the Flames. But whether it was Helga 1, Helga 2, Jaga, Midas, I haven't played the Sturm game, but really any Woolworth or Foodcast you're looking at into Flames has felt really good for minions. And I know talking to other minions players that they don't necessarily share that experience. Played into a lot of like the Signar Flames builds, whether it was Striker 1, Striker 2, all of those. I still do play into Fiona. But the Fiona practice I've been getting of late has been Fiona Irregulars as opposed to Fiona Flames, which I can see is certainly a difficult game, right? Playing through the feet with Marl Archons and everything seems incredibly difficult. But kind of what I was talking about before with, oh, and of course Malak Warlock for Food is fine there too. But with the Malak Blindwater list is, for the most part, the infantry in Flames doesn't have the best of defensive stats. And with most of your lists, whether it's with Voids porting back 8 inches to just using Boomhauer 3 to give Repo 3 to something, you can shave the front few models of an infantry unit fairly well. And the Flames list is melee-centric, right? So you're not under range pressure traditionally as well when you're taking off those front infantry models. So eventually they're going to feel like they're forced to commit as opposed to just losing a few models each turn with nothing back. And in that given turn, the list, the Woolworth Food list has all the tools to clear through a lot of infantry and then also still deliver a heavy to a Morrow Archon, to one of their heavies, because they're going to then lead, like if they jam up with Resolutes or Legion or whatever they're going to do that with, generally it's then followed by Gallant or a Toro or the Archons or whatever. And then once you can clear out that infantry, which Void Archons do well, Feral Valkyries do tremendously well, overtaking Warbeast can get through infantry and then kind of get out of the way with the one last overtake. You can then get pieces into their sturdier, harder hitting models. I found the Flames matchup to be consistently good for minions, and that's while bouncing between Warlocks at that. As for Infernals, the Infernals game is much harder. And I think you're really looking for a live scenario, to where they have to contest multiple things. I think like trying to beat Infernals on Invasion as minions is, I'd say, probably next to impossible. That seems very, very difficult unless you're getting an angle somehow to try and kill the Infernal Master, which they can play pretty much the whole game on their kill box line. So, also pretty much, something you're not able to do. So I think Invasion is probably a bit of a caveat there. That being said, other scenarios where there's elements that have defensive things where they have to get models across the table and you can kind of put throwaway models contesting their side, those games are okay, but it's trying to play a game where you're winning a scenario by round 7 is difficult. I think you have to try and win out by, like, round 4. So that doesn't mean you're probably contesting more aggressively than you normally would to make it so they have to invest more to clearing it, even though you're getting behind on attrition in that regard, making it so that they don't have as many models or as much flexibility to come contest your side. Because you want to ensure that you're scoring your side every turn on a spread the net or like a recon to any of those. And if you can ever make it to where you have contested effectively enough that they can't clear their side, which is a really difficult task, but something that could happen, that's where I think you're at a driving seat in that game. Infernals is hard. I found success into them, though, with Rask and Arcadius. I think you can push your melee damage rolls high enough to get through multiple hards in a turn with one Warbeast. And the other spot I found success just in the games I play with it was Helga 1, because of her feat allowing you to slam out heavies you normally wouldn't be able to kill to just aggressively score on a scenario on a top of 3 or bottom of 2, and then trying to close the scenario out the turn after that. So that's where I found success. It is still a hard game. I think with most lists being paired with a Rask or Arcadius, even if you're not playing Helga, Helga 1, I mean, and you're doing like an Arcadius Jaga, which I think if I was going to an event like a convention tomorrow with minions, I'd probably be bringing Arcadius and either Jaga or Helga 2. I think that would be where I'm at, just how consistent it is. But should you want to play Helga 1, because I still love her, I think her ability to really pressure scenario against Infernals, where they don't have many models they want to put in, even if they do, you can clear out multiple heavies in turn fairly easily, as I think where I'd be looking.
All right, so next question. We're back to Tokunator. He says, Squeal Company, do you think Carver plus Krillstone will be a playable option in the new Trolls and Feral theme? Striker 1 feat each turn seems a tad strong.
The answer to that is yes, I think it will be playable. I think it will be a bear for your opponents to slog through. I do also then want to caveat that with the Striker 1 feat bit of it, while true that you do get plus 5 armor, is tied only to Warbeasts that Carver would be running. So it doesn't affect like a Wrong Eye and Snapjaw or a Rorschenbrine. For Batten, it's just ones he's running. So it'll be interesting to see what the list turns into. Conceptually, in my head, I assuming you can take the Krillstone and Squeal Company, would be interested in seeing Carver running kind of like all the EE lights that Kalandri used to run in Mark II, because that would push their armor into, I think, the low 20s and give you a strong ranged element turn over turn, in addition to having just tremendous animi. So that's what I'm interested in most with Carver. I do think that it's going to be maybe one of the more boring lists to play, because you're just kind of pushing your models forward and letting your opponents bounce off them and then seeing what's there on the other side after you're done. Because Carver really is just casting Batten, sometimes mobility, and in a Squeal Company list, depending on what the infantry looks like, his feet might be a bit of a non-factor. I'd have to imagine brigands are in it, so brigands do take his feet well. On the surface, without knowing the elements of the theme just yet, I think the answer is yes, that can be a list. I think it has the elements to be one. I could see it being a list that I play, but without knowing what the theme benefits are, what the free rec choice options are, to definitely knowing what infantry is in it, it's I think too hard to pin down right now, but the ability to get that is, I think, tremendous.
Where currently is your excitement level for this new cross-faction theme?
Pretty high. So what I'm hoping is that we get the the Wars of the Old Faith treatment, where the warlocks in it will get to work for either faction. I'm more than happy to. I'm not not saying minions can't share. So I'm more than happy for trolls to be able to use whatever warlocks are in it for minions and trolls. But what I'd really like is to run some list pairs where we can bring the troll warlocks in. So I don't know necessarily which ones will be available to it, but just to go over a couple that have me interested, and I'm kind of guessing it's going to be on the ranged element side, so if any of the Grimms are in there, I think Grim 1 feat is an astounding control feat, and I'd be excited to play that one, especially because the feat fixes defense, which is the thing I think minions have the hardest time with, just by and large, In addition to having the no charging and speed debuff and all that, I think he's astounding. And then Gunnbjorn, I think, is one that can it could be very, very exciting for Roadhogs, because with what's the name of the spell that gives fully boosted range attacks? It's Guided Fire?
Guided Fire, I think, yeah.
Yeah. So with Guided Fire up, a Roadhog can charge somewhere and get its Assault Spray. That's fully boosted on the entire spray, and then presumably at some point kill their charge target, and then take its kill shot, Field Marshal Spray from Gunnbjorn, that's also then fully boosted to hit, and then put up its Animus, and then repo back 7. Like, that, I think, is exciting, combined with just everything else that Gunnbjorn's doing in Rockwall, his feet. I think he has Explosivo, which is great to give magic weapons out to the range weapons, in addition to giving minions RFP. So I'm excited for Gunnbjorn. I think that one can be very, very exciting. I'm not too sure who else might be in it. If we get Jarl, Cloudfeet's never bad, and Magic Bolt's great against most new low-arm solos. So that's pretty astounding. I'm interested to see what Squeal Company is to know how I'm able to plan for it. I do hope, though, that it is... again, to reiterate from before, I do hope that it's Warriors of the Old Faith style, to where the Warlocks can change between factions compared to, like, Flames, where it's a theme that multiple factions can use, but the Warlocks are not interchangeable.
Okay, so our next question from Combat. He says, Helga 1, which good matchups does she have and what does she struggle into?
So, good matchups, the things I'd be looking for a good matchup, I don't think I can list like a specific, I don't think it's good to list specific armies, but I can go over the elements that are really good. So any list where your opponent is using like a living infantry unit, especially one that is melee centered, is tremendous for her. But even if it's not, say it's like choir's fine. Really like any living infantry unit or like a low defense ish solo that might be living, like, but multiples of them. And really what you're looking for is on a turn where you'd either be looking for a really dynamic attrition or scenario grab or just an assassination, you want to have the ability for the void to charge something, take its dual attack spray first, and then kill something fairly reliably, and then use its 8-inch port to either get to a heavy warjack or get to an element of a zone to slam something out, or just to an opponent's warcaster. If you're playing against all construct infantry, that option's off the table. So I think Strange Bedfellows and Zal 2 are both hard for Helga. One, Zal 2 can't be slammed. That's just the theme benefits. So that's gets rid of her entire feat. And then Strange Bedfellows doesn't have enough living infantry to reliably get voids where you want them. So I think those two games are very hard. I think games where your opponent doesn't have much in the way of living or undead models can still be difficult, but I think those are much more playable than Strange Bedfellows or Exalted. The thing that the Helga list does now, I think, that it didn't do prior, is with the addition of Flugwug and Void Archons, all models that didn't exist for them, I don't know, more than 5-6 months ago, the assassination outs for this list have become just absolutely zany. With Voids being able to move an effective... What do they move? Speed 6, 7, 10. They get to move an effective 18 inches should you line things up correctly, because with dash they charge and actually move 10 inches, and then assuming they kill something with the spray, port 8 and have a 1 inch melee, so they reach out and threaten 19 inches. And then things you can do before they activate to make that threat range larger, is if you go with, say, Flugwug or Totem Hunter first, and you can slam something into their caster or over it, even better, to land a knockdown, what you can then do is hit pretty consistently with River Raiders, who then just work to chain slam things to where you want them. So you can move their caster forward, assuming you have models in the right spot to do so. River Raiders are also pretty hard to pin down because they also, like Void Archons, have dual attack, and with dash have parry. So what you can have them do is you can have them charge just really kind of any model, as long as you land in melee, of course, and then have it take its range 6 harpoon shot before it takes its charge attack, assuming it hits, which generally they're going to be going at knockdown models, so you have to not snake eyes the roll. They'll land base to base with that model, And then, assuming you're still in Helga's control range, it will then automatically hit in melee and just slam D6. An important thing to know with Helga's feat is it's not entirely dependent. Actually, it's not dependent at all on base sizes. So, like, a River Raider slamming a large base model will still slam at D6. The only thing that slows down the feat are models that can't be slammed in terrain. Terrain. So, like, you go half distance through shallow water or forest, and you get stopped by obstructions and walls. Short of that, River Raiders are just the ability to set up chain slams. Another kind of cute thing you can do, which I've had to do multiple times to get assassination runs the way I want them, is part of that 18-inch threat that or 19-inch threat that a Void has is being able to charge a model and then spray. And then, of course, while charging, you want to move your full distance in the direction you want to go. And there's times where there isn't a model for you to charge in that location. So what I've done with River Raiders or Feral Valkyries in the list, or using Totem Hunter or Floodwalk to set it up first, is you can slam your opponent's models. You can't set it up precisely, of course, but you can. You have the ability to kind of bounce it back and forth as you have to, but you can slam your opponent's models where you want them, within reason. Like, I had a game against Kara Sloan once where, in order to get a Void to Kara, I ran one of my primals forward, and then chain slammed a hunter into my primal, using the primal to, like, guarantee that the model would slam to where I wanted, had the Void charge it, and then sprayed into a ranger and was able to port to Kara. So it has a lot of tricks. It has a lot of tricks on how to utilize the feat. Again, you're looking for living infantry or undead infantry in the list to help Void Archons really go off. And I think the other aspect you'd be looking for is not to play into really dedicated gun lines like a Sylvestro, a McKay, or generally a Sloan. I didn't have a good off list at the time for Helga, which is why I just played Helga into Sloan and it worked that game. But I think those matchups are where it's hard, right? So even though you have a lot of shield guards, unless your shield guards make it so that the round after all of the components you need to deliver get delivered, that one round against the dedicated gun line isn't enough generally, which is where I think the threat ranges that Arcadius brings in or what you're looking for, or the round to just completely turn off guns with Rask is what you're looking at. But yeah, I've had a lot of fun playing Helga 1. It's still the Minions Warlock I've played the most. I think the assassination deaths are tremendous. I think you're just looking for a matchup where Voids get to do what Voids want to do, and that's a game where you can play it.
Okay, so this will be the final question of this episode. This is from Grey Lord Dave. He said, Thralgs are the best. Why are they so consistently overlooked? Short-sighted players, the wrong meta, or just don't want to use such perfectly designed models?
So when I was playing Maelok Blindwater, because I did try that in the beginning, I did have Thralgs on the list. And I think they're still strong in that list, right? Like, the ability to remove upkeeps is something that Maelok doesn't do when in Blindwater. Having an AD model is great. I think it's also spell immune, if I'm remembering the rules correctly. So a spell immune, fairly tough to kill because of all the Maelok stat bonuses, are pretty good. I think the problem it runs into is that when you get to Will Work for Food, there is such a wealth of solo options that it's hard to take really any solo. There's been games where I start list building and I'll have Orin in the list or I'll have Eilish in the list. And as I'm going through and building things, I go, man, this Warlock really needs this next X piece here. I got to cut something for it. What do I get rid of? And I'm cutting things that I put in the list initially because I thought it was good, like Eilish or Orin or, you know, whatever else. So it's not that I think Thralgs are bad. I just think that you have such a wealth of options that it's hard to need to reach for them. As a upkeep remover, when Dunian Archons also have Dispel and also offer just that much more, that just offer much more support in addition to the Dispel on hit. I don't necessarily think it's short-sightedness. I think that there are favorite models that people have within the factions they play. So they kind of just put them into lists because they like those models, either for how they work on the table or the way they look. And I don't think that's necessarily wrong. Like, I don't think taking a Thralg in a list is a wrong choice. There might be things that would give you more dynamic play on any given turn. But a Thralg will still do work. At least for me in Crix, I think I overvalue Warwick Sirens because I appreciate their utility, even in lists where I don't think a Warward Siren is one of the strongest things they could be bringing. And I think that's a similar vein to a Thrall, right? Is it the strongest thing you could put in the list? I think by and large, most times, no. But it still offers tools. And if you like the model, there's, you know, really no harm in taking it.
All right. Well, that is where we're going to go ahead and pause our conversation. And go ahead and check us out on Patreon if you haven't yet. You can sign up to support the podcast and to be able to listen to the bonus episode that we put out every week. Be sure to check out discountgamesinc.com for your gaming needs. As always, we have prices on Privateer Press and Games Workshop that are too good to be advertised. So go ahead and send me an email at j@discountgamesinc.com for details on our Voldemort pricing. Brad, is there anything that you want to promote while we're signing off?
Yeah, please. It is still scheduled right now, and I believe there's intentions to still hold it. In October in New Jersey, the Poker Brawl is still slated to run. It's a 5-man team event held in Manville, New Jersey. So the signups for it are currently live. I know that Seth, the gentleman running it, has been diligently following CDC guidelines and is setting up the room to try and make it so that the tables next to each other aren't tremendously close. Playing games in real life is going to come back at some point. I think he has every intention to run it unless he is not able to by the state. New Jersey is a state that is I don't want to it's definitely not overly cautious, right? But I think New Jersey is one of the more cautious states out there. So if it's something that could be run, I'm sorry, if it's something that could be canceled, I think New Jersey will take that action and do so. Seth has already said, should it get canceled for any reason, any entry fees you paid, he's going to fully refund back to you. So there's really no fear in signing up and getting canceled and not getting your money back. But for those that had conventions scheduled this year that are not going, or were looking for WTC globally, really whatever, right? I don't know of another con that's scheduled and still slated to go before then. So I've gone every year it's been run. I love the Poker Brawl. I think it's tremendous. It's a solos event and a 5-man team event all in one weekend. It's in a VFW hall, so the beer is dirt cheap. If you're looking to get out and play and look into start rolling actual dice again, I don't think I can suggest it enough.
Fantastic. Check that out if you're in the area, and it'll be exciting when people are able to play some games in person again.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Brad, thank you again for being on this episode. And tune in, everyone, to the bonus episode to hear some more of his wisdom.